Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Friday interview edition, John Hodgman, Avengers edition.
That's right.
Part three.
Endgame.
That's right. We don't have as much time as we probably need. We got about 45
minutes. Yeah, it's only a seven-hour movie that we have to condense.
To 45.
To 45, so let's get into it.
Yeah.
Open on Hodgman and Chuck. Hodgman is teaching Chuck how to shoot a bow and arrow. one of the great openings of any movie.
Oh man, this movie had so much sad stuff in it, and it starts out sad and it ends bittersweet.
It ends bittersweet, and it is. I'll make the subtext. The text. It is a movie about trauma and coping with trauma.
Yeah,
and it is that in a very honest way.
Yeah, and a culmination of this film series that just like one of the most impressive things in film history, I think.
Yeah,
is what they did with this MCU series.
But wait a minute, Chuck. We've Endgame. We've dropped everyone in media race, and they haven't followed the whole Hodgman and Chuck podcastical universe around Avengers. When I came, one of your earliest Movie Crush podcast episodes, I think, I came here to Atlanta and you were like, what's your favorite movie you want to talk about? And I said, Marvel's The Avengers. And you said, Marvel's The Avengers? That's dumb. And I said, no, Chuck, you're wrong.
I didn't say that's dumb.
It's great. You're like, really? Not, you don't want to talk about the third man? Or a classic movie like Rashomon or something? I'm like, no, I'm talking about a classic movie, an instant classic called Marvel's The Avengers. And I established that I love Marvel's The Avengers because on the one hand, it itself is a very – I mean, it's got a third act that's a mess like a lot of action movies, right? But it's enjoyable throughout.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible performances.
Yeah.
The realization of a dream that I thought was unrealizable when I was a comic book fan floating around – in the waters off Rhode Island on vacation with Tim McGonigal, talking about who would ever be in an X-Men movie, knowing in our minds there will never be an X-Men movie because culture will never accept these stories of stunted weirdos, and also they don't have the technology to make this look real,
man.
And what they
were you guys wrong?
What Marvel's The Avengers did was to announce to the world that yes, we take these characters seriously, and we do, and it's not just to make money. We're taking these characters seriously. We're taking their stories seriously. We're taking what their stories say about culture and America and life in America and the world seriously. And we're going to start interweaving these characters from different movies into a shared cinematic universe, akin to what Marvel Comics had always done and had been their great innovation in comics. Was to say that these characters all share the same world.
Yeah.
And they can go on dates with each other and get in fights with each other and hang out with each other and then go away on their own separate journeys as well. And they were going to do this in the movies, which, you know, for something that everyone says, like, there's only superhero movies now and that people just make superhero movies because they're such a safe bet.
Mm-hmm.
This was an enormous gamble that humans – who may have only seen Iron Man, who may only have seen Captain America, who have only seen Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And these, again, were all characters that were extremely esoteric, even within the Marvel comic universe. These are not their marquee characters. Marvel didn't have them. They took these sort of like second tier, famous but not so famous characters not a lot of people heard of, took their time to introduce them to the world, created of them, I think, sharper characters than they ever existed in the comic books, archetypes.
Yeah.
Of both sort of rule following morality, which is Captain America, versus rule breaking roguishness versus Iron Man. I appreciated that the whole story revolved around their friendship and the thing that drives them apart and brings them back together.
Yeah.
And we're going to start telling a story over a number of different movies.
Yeah.
And Joss Whedon, you know, I don't know whether he wrote The Secret Is I'm Always Angry.
Right.
That line. I presume he did. He's definitely capable of writing it.
Great line.
But it was just like, it was fiery on every level.
Mm-hmm.
And it only got better. And then that was the beginning of our mm-hmm. own epic, our trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back for Infinity War.
Right.
We skipped Age of Ultron.
Uh-huh.
We skipped all of the other, like, movies that were Avengers movies that pretended not to be, like Captain America Civil War.
Right.
We came back for Infinity War, and I said that this is the apex of – this is an astonishing apex of this, I guess now – so 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, six years since the Avengers, 10 years since Iron Man. The apex of this incredible new form of cinematic storytelling,
mm-hmm.
Unlike anything else, not for better or for worse, but different.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an astonishing movie that, and my point, which was made by and echoed by a lot of people, was when you, in the third act, when you realize Thanos has to win because he is the main character, he is the protagonist of this story.
Yeah,
and the movie was a comment on person like feeling right versus feeling wrong.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever feels like they're the bad guy.
Yeah,
and therefore, you know, we talked on a Movie House Mini. A movie crush mini pod or whatever you call them. Movie crush mini crush about the greatest villains. And that's a side journey for you, a side quest for you, the listener. Go listen to that because it'd be fun talking about what makes a good movie villain a movie villain. And my blind spot there was I didn't say Thanos because Thanos is one of the great villains of cinema.
Mm-hmm.
An incredibly dopey looking purple monster.
Mm-hmm.
Who is pure CGI, and yet through Josh Brolin's performance and the writing of the two guys who wrote that, the direction of the Russo brothers, and the CGI majesty of that character,
yeah.
which had gotten better over the course of the Avengers movies. Like,
yeah.
you look at Thanos' first appearance, and he looks like a dummy.
Yeah.
And here Josh Brolin created this Shakespearean
yeah.
character who believes in what he is doing.
Yeah.
And you are sympathetic to him, and you end up almost rooting for him to win at the end. Almost.
Yeah.
You don't want him to kill the Vision.
Yeah. Something that really struck me in watching this again for only the second time a couple of nights ago is the just how much this movie is about family.
Yeah.
Metaphorically and real families.
Yeah.
Whether it's Hawkeye.
Yep.
Or the families that they create with each other or Nebula.
Yep.
And Thanos and who's the Green Lady?
Gamora. Mm-hmm.
And an alter Nebula.
Yep.
Really, really.
And Black Widow.
Uh-huh.
Natasha Romanoff
yeah.
saying that the Avengers are her family. She's got no other family.
Oh, well, that scene, the devastating Soul Stone scene.
Yeah, listen, speaking of the devastating Soul Stone scene, we're going to presume you've seen Endgame.
Sure, yeah, everyone
If you
knows,
haven't seen it.
This is spoiler.
You should see it. It's great. But we're going to spoil it up.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, implicit. She sacrifices herself because she wants Cliff Barton to be, he has a family to go back to.
Yeah, but he's trying to do the right thing too.
Well, he became an off-screen monster and a mass murderer, I gather, is what the story is. Like,
right.
When he says, you know what I've done, and the whole thing about
yeah.
how Rhodey's been chasing him across the earth as he ruthlessly murders gangland cartels and Yakuza,
yeah.
people that he thinks didn't deserve to have survived the snap.
Yeah.
Right? That's how he's dealing with his trauma, right?
Yeah.
It's true. And so now here we are at the end game of our particular epic of intertwined podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I had said that Infinity War was the apex
yeah. What's your
of
thought
the
now?
Series and that it was the apex of this storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is that is still true.
Yeah. So I loved Endgame.
I
did think Infinity War was a little better. And watching it,
I think it's a more powerful work of art because it did not largely because it was free from the responsibility of ending the story, which
yeah.
is always the hardest thing to do.
It is,
and they did it masterfully.
Sure,
but for me, the theme that opens Infinity War,
uh-huh.
the lines are Thanos' lines. I know what it feels like to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I know what it feels like to know that you're right. Well, not that I know what it feels like to lose. Excuse me. That's the thing.
Right.
I know what it feels like to lose. I know what it feels like to know that you're right and fail anyway.
Yeah.
And that is what Infinity War is all about.
Mm-hmm.
That's what stress tests these characters in a way not only they've never faced before, the possibility of failure, but in a way you don't really get to see characters in superhero movies, action movies, fun movies, mm-hmm. really face real failure, you know, and not just sort of second act failure where they get back up again and then punch everybody.
Right.
But like real no takesies, backsies, even though this next movie is all about takesies, backsies, but no takesies, backsies, you failed. Mm-hmm. And you knew you were right. You knew you were right and you failed. And you knew you were right and Thanos knew he was right. And guess what? They're both people are right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Thanos is not wrong when he suggests that wiping out half of human life or, you know, sentient life across the galaxy mm-hmm. is going to be hard, but it's going to make the universe much more sustainable.
Yeah. He's an environmentalist.
You know? And the Avengers are not wrong to want to stop him from doing that either. Do you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And two rights make a wrong in this case.
Yeah.
And it gets wiped out. And that theme of like, I know what it feels like to fail, even though you know you're right or believe you're right.
Yeah.
Is not something I had ever seen explored in a movie like this before. And it's something that I didn't learn until I was an adult. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And how much better I think my life would have been if I had seen this movie as a kid and got that lesson that
yeah.
sometimes you just lose.
Yeah.
Even when you know you're right, sometimes it doesn't come together for you and you got to deal with it and pick yourself up and start over. Which yeah, is what this movie is.
For sure. One of my favorite parts about this movie in general is the time travel aspect and what it does for the arc of these characters and getting to revisit their past a little
yeah.
bit. Like Thor
yeah.
seeing his mother and Natalie Portman and fucking Tony Stark meeting his father.
Right.
And Captain America seeing, you know, being in the office at least briefly. Of what's her character's name?
Haley Atwell, Agent Carter, Peggy Carter.
Yeah, it's just all that stuff really, really just enriched it so much, I thought.
And, I mean, this is – now that I'm talking about it, I'm realizing, oh, yeah, like I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they made these movies so smartly
mm-hmm.
with such consideration and deep, fun, interesting thought, right?
Yeah, and such heart, too. That's so key here.
Right.
Is you really, really connect with these characters that are, you know.
Yeah, and so they're going back in time to see their old flames.
Right.
And we're going back in time to see our old flames, which are yeah. them earlier on.
Yeah.
Like when the Hulk, when Bruce Banner, who's now an intelligent Hulk.
Yeah, sort of the mid-sized Hulk.
Sees the 2012 Hulk yeah. going on a rampage is embarrassed.
Yeah. It's a little much.
You're reminded, like, these characters have gone on real journeys.
Yeah.
And when the Hulk and Rocket Raccoon go to recruit Thor,
uh-huh.
who so is, great. By the way, one of the great true portrayals of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
That you see, like that they decide, we're going to make Thor a sufferer of PTSD.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like
an alcoholic.
We're just going to go all in on the fact that he failed.
Like, yeah.
And when Rocket says, you know, Tony Stark says about Thor, what's wrong with him? He says he thinks he failed and he did.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he failed in a hard way.
Yeah.
And couldn't make it right by this time going for the head and chopping off Thanos' head.
Yeah.
And he truly is. He truly then, like, to make that decision to have him just go into depression
uh-huh.
was, I think, a heroic narrative choice. And to have him never not – he doesn't get better. He doesn't go back to who he was.
Right.
He gets better in his own way.
Yeah, you know? He doesn't. I mean, I really like this version of Thor. He obviously has got his comic chops down
right.
by this point in the series, but – just tubby Thor and the when he cries when he sees his mother and he's emoting a lot in this movie.
Yeah, he's so great in this. Chris
yeah,
Hemsworth.
Just so beloved. And I mean, I did not know this guy had this in as an actor when he first right. started doing these Thor movies.
Right. So, but the point I was going to make in terms of this going back in time, you know, seeing these characters in the, you know, and being reminded of this long history mm-hmm. and how much they've changed.
Yeah.
And for me, that came through when Bruce Banner as the Hulk, Bruce mm-hmm. Banner Hulk hybrid, Professor Hulk or whatever you call him.
Right.
Goes to recruit Thor, and he says, "I need you there, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in this place, you were there for me.
Yeah.
Now I'm here for you." And you remember one of the centerpiece huge fight scenes in Avengers, Marvel's The Avengers, is Thor and Hulk
yeah.
battling it out.
Yep.
And then making peace, and Thor and Hulk still punches him out after they at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that was funny.
And it's like, oh wow, these guys have changed.
Yeah.
Everyone has changed in a way that you don't get to see I guess in Return of the Jedi, there's this feeling that Luke, you know, Luke is in a different place for sure.
I didn't like that.
But it all happens off screen, you know?
Yeah. I didn't like badass Luke in Return of the Jedi.
Calm Luke. No longer whining Luke. Just like, I'm going to go see my father now.
Yeah.
Luke, yeah.
So another one of my favorite parts of this film was Paul Rudd in Ant-Man.
Yeah.
He really added so much. And he was one of the key components plot-wise because he had been... you know, he's the one that figures this out.
Right.
He's the one that really drives the story forward and solves the problem.
Right.
On, you know.
Well, really that rat that stepped on the yeah. button in the storage space.
That's right.
That brought him back from the quantum realm. It's really the inciting incident of this movie.
He's so great in this. I know, you know, Paul.
Paul's been on a lot of my audiobooks and we've hung out before. He is
seems
as
like the,
utterly
the best
delightful
dude.
As you would imagine.
That's great.
And
so good at as Ant-Man.
Yeah, and it speaks to the imagination of Kevin Feige and the team at Marvel Studios that, you know, when the Edgar Wright version of Ant-Man ended for whatever reason it did,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't give up on it.
Yeah.
This weird, because the only reason Ant-Man was going to be in the MCU was Edgar Wright liked this character. This
right.
is a weird ninth tier character.
Yeah, yeah.
But they didn't want to give up on this character, and not only did they bring him into the universe, but they made him a very central part of the universe.
Oh yeah,
and
especially here at the end.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, not to put the cart before the horse, not you know, or whatever. Maybe not a horse, but maybe one of those huge creatures that comes out of Thanos's comes out on a chain. The mega apes, the masked mega apes he keeps in his ship,
yeah.
and unleashes at the big final battle. But
yeah.
We'll talk about the final battle, but my favorite part of the final battle was Giant Man punching out that space
yeah.
sea slug in the background.
Oh, yeah. That
you know
was
what
just,
I mean?
Yeah.
And just like the majesty of giant Paul Rudd stomping around
yeah.
this battlefield in the background was like, to me, it was as sort of uncanny and exciting as seeing the Imperial Walkers. Like, you just felt the size of that guy.
Yeah, and I love how each character has, you know, they each bring something to the table when it comes to battle time.
Yeah.
He can just simply be bigger than everyone else and wipe out large swaths. And then you've got, I mean, it's almost unfair. Captain Marvel is so powerful. She's so powerful they needed to lose her for most of this movie.
Right, yeah.
Because she can kind of do anything.
Right, and that's, yes, she is definitely a Marvel Ex Machina at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And
but that great
and an exciting one because she's kick-ass, you know?
Yeah.
For sure, but I mean, the it'll be interesting to see, and we can talk about what phase 900 or whatever phase we're on of the MCU is going to be like now that—
Yeah.
They have a truly super duper powered person in this
yeah.
world because the Hulk was super strong but had his limitations. Thor obviously super strong but had he was kind of a dum-dum. You know, mostly the, you know, two, how many Avengers are there in the Ridge? Seven?
In that first movie?
Six.
Well, Thor, Hulk.
Thor, Hulk, Cap,
Iron Man, Cap, Black Widow.
Black Widow and Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a third of them are just dudes.
Yeah.
Just two, you know, third of them are normal human beings with high combat training.
Right.
Do you know
right.
what I mean?
Or tech. And
yeah,
or tech.
And or tech, right? Oh, yeah. Well, of course, Iron Man 2. So that's the third. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Sorry. It was two out of six is a third.
Yeah. this is
so half. Half of them are normals.
Yeah.
That are completely unenhanced in any way.
Yeah.
And you know, all of the superpowers that were being introduced whether it was Wanda's powers, whatever they are, mm-hmm. Quicksilver, all the superpowers that were added into this mix, were still pretty low-level superpowers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So Captain Marvel is a real question mark about how that's going to affect these stories, because
yeah.
I think they were allowed to be super-duper – they were superhuman stories about superhumans.
Mm-hmm.
See how I did that?
I did.
Super, extremely human stories about extreme humans.
This is also a film of moments, of these really powerful moments that you know when they're making the movie or writing the script, it's just going to like, you know, the chill bump moments.
Right.
And a few of mine, and it's I was trying to pick out my favorite, but the women assembling.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Yep.
And fuck you to anyone who says that was pandering to the moment in time we're in.
Yeah. That person was not. A young woman or girl watching that on screen.
It was awesome.
And knowing that was normal and okay and fantastic.
Right. You know? The moment where the Captain America gets the hammer.
Incredible.
Incredible.
Paying off a tiny little scene in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
In such a powerful way.
So good.
You know.
And then a couple of other moments, but that final battle, that, you know, that one fucking money shot when they're all charging at each other.
Yeah. Avengers Assemble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goosebumps
right.
again.
Right.
When, you know, the Pegasus is flying in and Quill is flying and, you know, they're, it's just, it's, I can't even talk about it in any sort of like intelligent way except to say it's fucking awesome.
No. And you know, like here's the thing. Is a podcast by Alec Baldwin for WNYC. Uh-huh. It also is the start of this sentence. This movie, I think, does labor very well, but is labored and burdened with the burden of ending the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who's ever created anything, you know, even a podcast, like how do you get to the ending? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like that's a hard thing to do. How do you pay off everything that we've done
yeah.
in a way that's satisfying, right? And not only does this movie labor under that, but that scene in particular. What does the final big fight scene look like?
Yeah, because you've done all that before.
Right.
And it's hard not to just have it be a retread.
Right.
But what this had going for it was all in another one of the great moments is all of these characters that we were missing the whole time
right.
from the snap
right.
coming back and Strange and them opening up all those portals. It was just fucking
amazing.
And
I'm sure that there were people out there who figured out, like, because what you're thinking is, all right, we have now been shown that that even Captain America with Mjolnir is not strong enough to defeat Thanos
mm-hmm.
one-on-one or three-on-one. Our characters can't do it. And Thanos has infinite backup in the form of mega apes
and then the ship
Outriders and the ship
fires.
That rains fire
yeah.
and everything else. So, we know we're going to get out of this with a win this time.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see it coming. We didn't see losing in Infinity War necessarily. Not everyone did.
Right.
It took me, for me, it was a long, sober, dawning realization of both like sadness and rightness that they were going to lose in
yeah.
Infinity War. But this time they're not going to lose. So how are our guys going to get out of this classic? You know, it is a classic kind of storytelling maneuver where you put your character up a tree and then you just start throwing rocks and arrows at
right.
him or her or they. And the question is, how do you get out of that tree?
Yeah.
And I did not see. I'm sure there were smarty pants guys on the internet who did see sling rings coming and everyone coming, you know, teleporting in all of a sudden.
Well, even if you see it coming, it's still a great moment.
Even if you see it coming, you don't. What you don't see coming is the small gesture of storytelling.
Yeah,
where he starts hearing Sam Wilson in his earpiece.
Oh man!
And he's like, "What, Sam?" And you see him dealing with the fact that this is like he feels like he's having a hallucination.
Yeah.
And then he goes, "On your left."
Yeah, on your left.
So amazing. Which, of course, is how the character was introduced in Captain America: Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And then you see that thing fly open,
oh,
and it's that dawning realization of, you know, it gets bigger and it gets bigger and it gets bigger and it's bigger.
Yeah.
you know, a final battle scene is a story unto itself. Mm-hmm. And it's a story in action, often more than words, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there is Michael Arndt, who wrote Little Miss Sunshine, was obsessed is a strong word, but fascinated with the story choreography of the final battles of Star Wars, Empire, and Return of the Jedi. That you have three things going at different times. Like, mm-hmm. There are three storylines, and you cut back and forth among these three storylines. And that's how you keep the momentum going.
You know what I mean? While also having a responsibility to simple things like the geography of the battle, so you can follow it and it's not confusing.
It needs to be clear.
Because you can lose your way a lot of times. A lot of movies have.
Right.
But it's I think Marvel's always done a great job at being very clear with the geography of their battles.
What's happening and where it's happening.
Yep.
You have to keep in mind why it matters.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be exciting. It can't be a slog. Do you know what I mean?
Everyone's got to have their individual moments.
Right.
And they do.
Right. And what they pulled off here is there are no three storylines in this.
Right.
Right. It's just once everybody comes in, first there are acts to this whole play. And the first act is our three, you know, our three big characters, Thor, Iron Man, and Cap, trying to just beat the heck out of him, to kill him proper this time, as Thor says.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't work.
That's a good battle too.
Right.
That fight with Thanos.
Right. And then next comes act two. Here comes everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Thanos brings in his team. We have the reveal of our team. This insane tableau. As you point out, like, there's a Pegasus in there. You know, it's like there's a Pegasus and a giant man wearing a spacesuit.
Uh-huh.
And there's a Hulk.
Yeah.
And there are the armies of Wakanda with their floating ships, and then there are Norse gods, the remaining of Asgard.
And then there's Bucky Barnes with his machine gun.
Yeah, that,
which is just great.
Yeah. Bucky Barnes with his machine gun. Like, all of these threads that are so visually and tonally different from all the different movies have now come together into this phantasmagoric stew of what am I seeing?
Yeah.
And they just hit each other hard, front lines, right?
Uh-huh.
That's act two. And then you are misled, and they do the Russo brothers, and I'll just use the Russo brothers just as an unfair synonym for the whole creative team,
mm-hmm.
because the story team and the, you know, the production team and everything else. Like, just say let's just say the movie.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is very adept. These movies are very adept at misleading the audience.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden there's this on the battlefield improvisation that we're gonna get the Infinity Stones out of Thanos' reach by mm-hmm. throwing them into the back of Scott's van.
Right.
Which is great when he's like, we have another time machine. Ba, 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 ba.
Yeah. Where's that? Where's the van?
Totally hilarious. Gave him something to do.
Yeah.
And then of course, the time machine gets hacked to death by Thanos.
Yeah. Well, and you also get that great sequence of the, I call it like the football game.
Right. Yeah.
Where they're advancing the glove forward,
right?
Passing it off to one another,
which of course relates to your theme of family mm-hmm. and cooperation.
Yeah,
the Avengers from the very first, and you know, this is like I'm fanning out over this movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Sure,
but I'm not doing it because I think it's so great. I think it deserves it.
Yeah,
because
it's
this
very
has
much
been
earned.
This has been what like or like everything in it or not in the Marvel Universe experiment phases 1 through 3.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a real they've gone on weird tangents. The love affair with Bruce Banner and Natasha Romanoff was never paid off.
Mm-hmm.
There are some loose ends and threads and some plot holes and some ups and downs. But they've been so good at being on theme.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Fury in Avengers, and I think in his first appearance at the end of Iron Man 2, says the Avengers Our team that come together to handle the problems individuals can't,
mm-hmm.
or we as individuals can't, and so the handing off of the iron, you know, the I think they call this Infinity Gauntlet the Nano Gauntlet or something,
because
it's the Iron Man Gauntlet with has the Infinity Stones.
Oh right, yeah.
As they hand that football off, it is, you know, they realize they can't do it alone. Spider-Man can't get there on his own.
Mm-hmm.
T'Challa can't get there on his own. Even Captain Marvel can't get there on her own. And she's the superpowerest of them all.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, she comes in. What a great entry in that battle scene.
Yeah.
Because that's the third part of that, I guess, is the Hellfire.
Right.
Where Thanos basically is willing to sacrifice his army.
Right.
To kill everyone.
To kill everyone. And for him to presumably survive.
And she flies right through that ship.
He's doing it in order to get out of he's been captured by Wanda, Maximoff,
mm-hmm.
The Scarlet Witch.
Yes,
she's too
yes.
powerful for him.
Yeah.
And that's an area where if we have time to go back around and put a pin in it, maybe this will have to be a two-part.
Maybe.
This is Endgame Part 1. But the face-off between Wanda and Thanos is actually, I think, a missed opportunity for story.
How so?
Her powers were introduced her powers have been portrayed very inconsistently, which I think is a weakness for that character. She starts off as a mind manipulator,
mm-hmm.
and then is basically recast as an energy. I shoot red things out of my hands.
Yeah,
which she had. I guess she had that power in Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
But her introduction was, I can get inside your head.
Right,
and that's a much more interesting and I think, frankly, powerful power. And if they had put that in the background and let you forget that until this moment, having a character who can get inside of Thanos' head,
mm-hmm.
I think, and make him confront some of the stuff that he's done to make Thanos afraid.
Right.
Or feel sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Especially this version of Thanos, who is not the one that we know from Infinity War, but
right.
is a younger, angrier, less nuanced Thanos mm-hmm. on purpose and brilliantly. That would have been something to see what's inside of Thanos' head.
Yeah, but you can't really do that on the battlefield, can you?
Well, I mean, you think about how when she went into people's heads and manipulated their minds in Age of Ultron. Have you seen Age of Ultron?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you get to see inside their dreams.
Oh, that's true.
You could have gone into Thanos' head and then see whatever it is that's going on inside of there, see their battle in his head,
mm-hmm.
and then get jarred out of it because I don't know, masked mega ape hits Wanda or something, you know,
right.
and gets broken free. And before she can get him again, he says, rain fire.
Yes.
You know, like, but you feel, he feels fear in that moment when mm-hmm. he yells rain fire. And because he knows that she's very, very, very powerful and maybe has an edge on him. So he's got to get everybody, got to take her out that way.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to have seen his fear and his sorrow for a character that we're really fascinated with and invested in both, you know, I would have loved to see that. So that was an oversight. You, Russo Brothers, you dropped the magic gauntlet there. you dropped the nano gauntlet there.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely liked Infinity War a little better. I thought this, upon second viewing, was a little baggy.
Yeah.
At 3 hours. I'm trying to think of what to cut, you know.
Well,
it's tough.
I think that for as adept as they are at misdirection, right? And I think the ultimate, most beautiful, I mean, the way that they open the movie with the, like, let's pick ourselves up and go back and fight again.
Yeah.
And they win, but the win is not a win at all.
Right.
You know, there is no undoing, it would seem, what has happened. And Thor's redemption,
mm-hmm.
where he does go for the head.
Yeah.
But you see on his face that this is not going to give him any peace whatsoever. In fact, it probably made it worse.
Yeah.
He's been turned into an executioner, you know.
Right.
Like Rocket going, what have you done?
Yeah.
Like Rocket is not the most moral character in the universe.
No, not at all.
But even he was like, what are you doing? You just summarily executed this guy without even talking to us.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other part of that scene that's so powerful.
He went rogue.
Is that he went rogue. And this is about family, as you point out.
Like, yeah.
It's about doing right by your family, and that's not so. So that was
yeah.
that whole sequence is like, we have hope. We figured out we got Tony back. We figured out where he is. We've got the signature. We're gonna get up there, and we're gonna fly to space and take care of this forever. And
mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone was particularly fooled that that was gonna happen. Do you
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that Thor cutting his head off was a true surprise to me.
Sure.
It made perfect
Same
emotional
here.
Sense. And then 5 years later.
Yeah.
So like, yep, this is a different movie. This is a different movie than what you thought. Like,
yeah.
We had a job to do, which was to deal with the immediate desire for revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And now the rest of this movie is everyone dealing with the fact that they might not ever get revenge. Even if they go forward and then back in time.
Yeah.
And do try a do-over and succeed.
Yeah.
In this big fight. There is loss, and there is, you know, you can't go back.
Right? Yeah. And it also asks some big questions. Like the fact that Tony, you know, he figures out time travel in that great scene early on.
Right.
And he goes and he, you know, he's got this life now.
Yeah.
And this family and this daughter. And they got, like Pepper says, they got lucky.
Right.
And he says, you know, I don't have to do this. I can throw it into that lake and bury it.
Yep.
And you get that sense. I didn't see it coming that he was going to die right away.
I didn't either. I didn't. I mean, there was a big kerfuffle at my son's middle school. People spoiling.
Oh, that sucks.
People spoiling the movie and trying to stay unspoiled and hiding from each other.
Yeah.
And I was unspoiled, though I had heard that various people were going to die.
Well,
different rumors. And
yeah,
stuff.
It's interesting though. If you hear that and think like, it's interesting to think like, who do you lose? And looking back, there is no other way that this could have gone other than Iron Man, because he started it all.
Right.
Like it's the perfect device to lose him.
And it is, you know, the ultimate. You know, I think we were mentioning in the Movie Crush minisodes.
Mm-hmm.
The MCU's got good arcs.
Yeah.
Good arcs. They figure out arcs for people and they pay them off.
Boy, his arc was so well done.
And, you know, going back to Avengers, Marvel's The Avengers in 2012, when mm-hmm. Captain America says, you're not the guy to lay down on the mine to save your friends.
Yeah.
And, of course, that pays off at the end of The Avengers when he does make the sacrifice play,
uh-huh.
but escapes death.
Right.
And now this is the ultimate sacrifice play.
Yeah.
So, and you know, that's Tony Stark's arc is going from, because you want to say, well, he was a weapons manufacturer who realized that weapons were hurting people and therefore he made himself a man of iron to protect the world,
mm-hmm.
who uses a lot of extremely devastating weapons to do it. Like, it's,
yeah.
it's not exactly play.
Right.
His transformation from the beginning of Iron Man to the end of Iron Man isn't quite as easy as it was in the comics, where he's like, I don't make weapons anymore. I just make weapons for me.
Right.
Like, it's about him becoming less selfish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Avengers is about him becoming less selfish.
Yeah.
And in Endgame, they know these characters so well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Steve Rogers who's counseling whichever Russo brother it is in that – in that post-trauma group.
Oh, is one of them in there?
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
The first scene after the 5 years later is a talk therapy session.
Yeah.
You know? By the way, if you're suffering from trauma or even if you're not, talk therapy is great.
Yeah.
Go get it. Go get yourself some therapy.
Yeah, that's a great scene and how everyone's dealing with their loss, because that was really powerful. And then Natasha, as the leader, just defeated though and like crying by herself.
Yeah.
Really, really powerful stuff.
You know, and the feeling in that scene where she's talking to all the holograms as they report in and she doesn't want them to leave.
Yeah.
They're her family.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she has become the leader of the Avengers.
Yeah, she's in charge now.
And Captain America goes to the therapy group and says to everybody there, you got to move on. We mm-hmm. have to move on.
Yeah.
And then he shows up with Wanda. He's like, I can't move on.
Yeah.
Like, I can't. Neither can shape. Like, we can't. We'll never be okay. This will never feel okay.
Yeah.
And of course, it's Tony who says to him, I have moved on. And he has.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Captain America can't move on. Tony has. And yet Tony has now understood that it would be selfish
mm-hmm.
to not do this.
Right.
There's a definition of selfish that would include hiding time travel from your friends so that you don't lose your daughter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you know, that is the, you know, you think about that snap at the end being the ultimate sacrifice
mm-hmm.
of his life. But really, it's when he shows up at the Avengers compound and says, I really hope that I don't lose everything in my life.
Yeah.
Like, but let's do this.
Well, that and he has really that key line too at the end there. He said, and maybe not die trying.
Right.
Would be nice.
Yeah. Maybe not die trying would be nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And that funeral scene, I mean, it feels like the end of the movie. And we chatted, you know, at my house yesterday a little bit about this, that there's like a whole other 30 minutes after that.
Yeah. Well, which also includes one of the more controversial elements of Endgame, which is that Captain America, the gift that Iron Man gives Captain America by going along with the heist, which is introduced as a concept by Scott Lang, who's a professional thief.
Right.
Just like everything ties in. Everything's mm-hmm. right for every person.
You yeah. know?
The gift that Captain America can get is finally the gift to move on.
Yeah.
You know, to get a life, as he says to Natasha at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to go back and pay off the promise that he made to Peggy Carter at the end of Captain America, First Avenger, which is, I will dance with you.
God, that moment.
And it's so perfect and incredible.
Yeah.
Also, totally wrong and effed up.
What do you mean?
Well, there is a lot of conversation on the internet about the fact that Captain America goes back in time.
Uh-huh.
And it would seem, the movie suggests, and I think the Russos have supported this, that Captain America, that Steve Rogers goes back in time,
mm-hmm.
marries Peggy Carter, and just stays in the background while the events of everything that we've seen in the movies unfold,
mm-hmm.
and then shows up, knows that what time it is, you know, remembers when he left this timeline to go back in time mm-hmm. and shows up as an old man
right.
with a shield that he got somewhere to give it to Sam.
Yeah.
And people have said, like, that's terrible. Like, he went back in time and he didn't, you know, like—
He didn't cap it up.
He didn't cap it up. He gave up his job. Like, he retired.
Yeah.
And it's fair, right? People get to retire. He's 100 and something years old.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's gone through a lot and he's fought a lot. But— Is he really just going to, like, people are like, does he knows that Hydra has infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D. Does he not tell Peggy Carter?
Boy, I didn't think of any of that shit.
I know, but it's like.
I just thought about a man being with the love of his life.
Yeah. For me, I make it better with he went back and it started a different timeline and he flipped from this timeline.
Right.
From that timeline. And he did his part. He did his duty.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's just hard to imagine Captain America saying, no thanks, I'm not going to be a part of this fight.
Yeah, he above all others.
Even if in that world the fights were different
uh-huh.
and not quite the same fights, the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't like a Captain America who doesn't eventually get up and say, I can do this all day long,
mm-hmm.
which is the motif of Captain America, hilariously played when he plays him. He fights against himself.
Yeah.
You know, and he gets up. The other Captain America is like, I can do this all day long. I was like, I know. You know,
yeah.
Like, I don't like a Captain America who lays down.
No, same.
And if the story, there is a lot of ways to interpret what happened between that dance with Peggy Carter and his flipping, you know, and his new life,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of his new life, and his aging, and then coming back to this timeline to give Sam the shield and the moniker of Captain America.
Yeah.
But the one that I don't like to imagine is that he just lays down during that time. I have to imagine that Captain America and Peggy Carter just kicked all kinds of ass all the time.
Sure.
And had a great time.
Just go with that.
And had a great time doing it together.
Yeah.
Purged that timeline's shield of Hydra.
Uh-huh.
And then just like had fun at home.
Made sweet love.
And abroad. Yeah.
I liked Don Cheadle in this too.
But I felt like that was a little bit of an oversight, you know.
Sure.
For a project that is so keen on story to kind of, I feel like they really wanted to have that trick
mm-hmm.
of Captain America coming back as an old man.
Yeah.
And
I get it.
I would have rather him just not come back at all and you just don't know.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
See, I liked seeing him.
You just don't, he doesn't come back at all and then you close on him dancing with Peggy Carter and we just don't know what happens after that.
That's true. I really like Don Cheadle in this.
Yeah.
Like he finally gets, I think he shines more in this movie than any of the others.
You know, he's so great. Don Cheadle, you just want to watch him act all day long. Even the smallest lines have presence and purpose and character and you know, life.
And that's what's so great about this world is even the smaller characters like him and who's the one that rides the Pegasus? What's her name?
Valkyrie.
Yeah, Valkyrie.
Tessa Thompson.
Yeah, like everyone gets their due and everyone has their own little mini arcs.
Yeah.
They're so good at just stuffing those little small arcs in there, which is just enough.
But you know who doesn't in this movie?
Who?
And really at all? Winter Soldier.
Oh.
Bucky.
Yeah, you're right.
Falcon.
I mean, he has his, well.
He's great, you know, but.
He's getting his own movie, isn't he?
Well, he's the new Captain America.
Oh, well, that's right.
And that's a thing where I'm like, Sam Wilson becomes Captain America for a period of time in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Wilson as a character historically in the comics has a very interesting friendship with Steve Rogers. I can't say that I felt like, yeah, that's the right move. Like the two people who might take up the mantle of Captain America obviously are Bucky or Sam.
Mm-hmm.
But he could have given the shield to either one, and I would have felt like, I don't even know who these guys are. Like,
well, he certainly has not had much to do. I think Anthony Mackie is such a likable guy.
Yeah.
They kind of banked on his personality just being enough for now.
Right, right, right. But, I mean, you know, it's big shoes to fill, and I appreciate their desire to usher out Steve Rogers and pass the torch.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't – I mean, and this is not a criticism of either of these actors. I mean, after Winter Soldier, to my mind, they really fell into the background,
mm-hmm.
which is that kind of deep background where Rhodey started.
Mm-hmm.
But by this movie, he had grown into a true member of the family.
Yeah.
It didn't help, obviously, that Sam and Bucky had been snuffed out at the end of the last movie. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But you're right that Rhodey was obviously played by Terrence what's his name? The actor. Notoriously difficult actor who's now on Empire.
Oh, Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard.
Yeah.
Terrence Howard played Rhodey in Iron Man.
But he was difficult, right? So they got rid of him.
And they brought in the amazing Don Cheadle.
Mm-hmm.
And he had grown into a character. Like I would have, obviously it would have been impossible if Steve Rogers had given Rhodey mm-hmm. the shield. I've been like, Yeah. That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
I want to see. He just feels like such a character of substance and point of view. And the way he stood up to the Thunderbolt Ross, mm-hmm. William Hurt.
Yeah.
You know, like anyway. But yes, I'm just saying that's just all by way of saying I agree with you. His performance was great.
Yeah, he was great. And the one thing that kind of bugged me was Pepper Potts showing up to fight. I don't know. It didn't move the needle for me.
Her character becomes that character in the comics. I've not read that storyline.
Oh, really?
It has some, like, so why does she get a suit of armor?
It has a basis in the books.
That felt a little bit, you know, Marvel Ex Machina as well. When did she learn to use the armor? Why did she want to? It didn't seem in character to her.
Agreed.
To want to become an adventurer in that way.
Yeah.
Did she, I mean, I could see a situation in which she puts it on reluctantly in order to join the fight because she knows they need all hands on deck or something like
right.
that.
Right. She has a daughter now. Maybe there's more at stake for her.
Yeah, but she also has a lot at stake in surviving that battle if possible.
And staying at home with her daughter.
Yeah, you know, so. But I mean, you know, all of that said, you know, there's a thing that I remember a lot from a lunch that I had with David Icke, who mm-hmm. was a television producer.
Mm-hmm.
He was the co-executive producer and co-creator of the reboot of Battlestar Galactica
right.
with Ron Moore. And Battlestar Galactica was a purposefully and notoriously downbeat show
mm-hmm.
where characters faced real loss and trauma in ways that popular culture hadn't seen on television before. But he was saying, you know, we just finished this episode where all of our Galacticans go and fight the Cylons and they do essentially a heist on them and they all come back alive and they win and they celebrate. And he said, it's actually out of character for our show to have such an upbeat episode.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but it's all part of the balance that you have to strike
because mm-hmm.
our show is so downbeat and that's why people are tuning in. But even so, sometimes people just want to eat a cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
People just want to see their friends on television do good,
mm-hmm.
like do it and kick ass and be awesome at it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't – and that to me was moments like that where perhaps it wasn't exactly explained or earned, but it's just heroic and you feel great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
You just want to eat that – you deserve that cheeseburger. And, you know, Infinity War and Endgame were a lot of health food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of narrative
kale.
You know, like life is unfair. Trauma leaves deep marks.
Mm-hmm.
You want to move on, but you can't move on.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things you can't take back. it's fine to have all of a sudden in my mind, like, yeah, Ant-Man is punching out a giant space slug.
Yeah.
Live it up.
Yeah.
You've earned this. You've gotten this far and you've earned it.
Totally.
So I put her appearance as Rescue. That's the name of her character in that category.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, we're kind of out of time.
Yeah. Tune in a year from now for Endgame Part 2.
Oh, I think we hit the high points.
That's true. When you talk about when things, yeah, you know what? I'm not even, I've ladled enough critique into this love fest.
Yeah. Great movie.
It was a great movie. And I think
it was a funeral for us all in a lot of ways. The ending of this amazing series.
Yeah. You know, people like podcasts because they like to be with their friends. They like listening to their friends in the other room talk while you're there. I like listening to you, my friend. I'm lucky I get to talk to you in person. But
yeah.
And people like franchise movies and books and history and, you know, fantasy series and science fiction series because they like their friends.
Yeah,
they
develop their friends. A real relationship with these characters.
It's family.
Yeah.
You know, it's your family. And this was a death in the family for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I feel sad. I feel sad because I don't care. I don't care that Spider-Man's not going to be part of the MCU anymore because I don't think I'm going back to the MCU.
Oh, really?
I look forward to having my mind changed.
I think that you will.
And I have heard some of the things they're spinning up for WandaVision in this new Disney Plus mini MC universe for WandaVision. You see the promise of what's going to happen for Loki because he escaped from this timeline.
There's a Black Widow movie coming out, right?
There's a Black Widow movie. Obviously, there's going to be another Black Panther movie, which I'm eager to see. I think that there's going to be another Ant-Man movie, and everyone loves Paul Rudd. I'm not like I'm not going to see the movies, but this is the end of this story.
Yeah.
And I will accept if it doesn't get better than this. Do you know what I mean?
Me too. I totally get it.
And the coda of having Spider-Man Far From Home, I feel like was another movie for another time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of like, I actually don't need this Tony Stark stuff in the Spider-Man movie. I kind of just want to see a Spider-Man movie now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm ready to move on. Thanks, Iron Man, for killing yourself.
Yeah.
I'm ready to move on.
Yep.
So there you go.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. Endgame has ended.
Oh, no. Before we go, where can people buy your book, Medallion Status?
That's right. My name's John Hodgman. I've been the guest on... on the Movie Crush Cinematic Universe since the beginning. We've now closed out our multi-episode arc. I also write things. I write books sometimes, including Vacation Land, which came out a couple of years ago, and now the end game of Vacation Land. Vacation Land was the Infinity War 2, Medallion Status.
Oh, man, that part late in Medallion Status where you sacrifice yourself.
There is a part that you could probably describe accurately as that. It's not a sequel to Vacation Land. It's a whole new book about all of the strange jobs that I've had since I was 13 years old, the strangest of which probably being becoming an unintentional famous minor television personality.
That's right.
It's about losing that job to some degree and dealing with the loss of that status by seeking out in increasingly unhealthy ways medallion status on Delta's frequent flyer mile program. You can upgrade to medallion status right now by going to bit.ly/medallionstatus. That's bit.ly/medallionstatus, all one word, all capital letters, where you can order or pre-order depending on the time frame of where you are in your time heist. You can order or pre-order the hardcover book, the audio book narrated by me, or the electronic edition at all of your favorite retailers, including IndieBound, which will direct you to your local independent bookshop. Thank you, Chuck, for allowing me to talk about Medallion Status.
Of course. I can't wait to read it.
The culminating apex of a 48-year narrative journey.
All right. Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Movie Crush is produced, edited, and engineered by Ramsey Yunt here in our home studio at Pont City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.